Good morning. I'd like to make a few comments about the gospel this morning, but I'm going to do it sort of in reverse order, starting at the end and working my way back to the beginning, because it's the first one that I want to develop at the greatest length. The very end, it says that Jesus went preaching and driving out demons throughout the whole of Galilee. We've already heard that once before. This is now already a Markan refrain. It's what Jesus does. He preaches and he heals. And he's done it in Capernaum. Now he's going around and doing it in the villages. He'll do it all around. Preaching and healing are the two ministries that characterize who he is and what he does. Secondly, he rises very early before dawn. I'm not sure I could have lived with this man. And went off to a deserted place where he was at prayer. Was at prayer. It says where he prayed is the literal translation here. But the Greek is a little more forceful than that. It's an imperfect in the Greek. It has a connotation of going on, praying, not just he prayed. This is after a long day. He gets up early in the morning and goes out to a deserted place to pray. We tend to think of, there's only so much time and you invest it in certain ways. And the more you do, the less you pray. The more you pray, the less you do. For Jesus, it's quite the opposite. The more he does, the more he prays. The more he does, the more he needs to pray. It's by getting out there alone with God and being in communion with the one whom his heart calls Abba that he's able to go from village to village preaching and driving out demons. We might well learn from that example. Thirdly, it is in evening, after sunset, that they bring all the sick to him. This is in balance to what we heard last week. Last week, we heard Jesus in the synagogue on Saturday morning in the middle of the Shabbat service, driving out a demon who's standing there screaming at him. He's not one to stand on ceremony. This is an emergency. The whole service is being disrupted by this man's possession by a demon. He breaks the laws, plenty of laws, and does the exorcism right there in the middle of the service. That doesn't mean he has no regard for the law. Doesn't mean he doesn't keep the Torah. He is, to the contrary, a very observant Jew, a very Jewish Jew, if you will. He wears the tallit, the prayer shawl, with the tzitzit, the fringes. He is particular for them to bring the sick to him after sunset, after the Sabbath is over. Even though he knows that means he will be there, all evening and into the night, and then up again early the next morning. This balance is important for him, keeping the law while not being tied down by the law. And finally, and I think most importantly, Jesus goes into the house of Simon Peter, and cures Simon's mother-in-law. Now, note, by the way, that we have no indication in anywhere in the Gospels of the marital status of the other 11. We really don't know how many of them were married, how many of them were single. Peter, however, has a mother-in-law. Now, I've heard occasionally of people adopting a second mother. Never heard of anyone adopting a mother-in-law. I think you only get one of those one way. That leads us to suspect that the one that Jesus chose as chief of the apostles was, in fact, a married man. Considering the shortage of priests in this country today, the sooner people get back to that thought, the healthier we may all be. Anyway, Peter's mother-in-law. Now, this is the house of Simon and his brother Andrew. So his mother-in-law is living with him. That makes her a widow. She would be living with her husband, not with her son-in-law and his brother, if she could help it, especially considering that her son-in-law is a notorious hothead. She's sick. She has a fever. Jesus comes in, lifts her up, the fever leaves her, and she begins to wait on them. Now, when I read that, there were probably three reactions. First of all, most people paid no attention to that at all, which is listening to the next important thing. Secondly, guys who noticed it said, well, yeah. I mean, what else would she do, right, except take care of the men? And women who noticed it said, whoa, wait a minute, who are these arrogant turkeys? This woman has just been in bed with a fever, and as soon as she gets out of bed, they expect her to wait on them. Who do they think they are? Well, all of those are actually beside the point. The message is a lot deeper than that. This is one of those places where a little careful attention will go a long way. So looking at Mark's architecture, if you will. Mark invents the idea of gospel. He's the first person, not in the sense of good news, but in the sense of organized story about Jesus. They've been preaching the good news for a generation now. But he's the first one to take the stories about what Jesus said, what Jesus did, different places, different time, and weave them together to make a coherent story. He tells the story of Jesus by telling the stories of Jesus. These are pre-existing pieces of tradition, some floating around orally, some written down. He's got to bring them together. This is not like expressionist art, you know, where you throw oil at the canvas and see what sticks. This is like making a mosaic. You've already got all these jewels, and the idea is to put them together in such a way that they form a pattern, that they're even more beautiful than they were individually. This is a part of Mark's structure. Then the fever left her, and she waited on them. Now that takes the meaning, the chance to find it away from us. It's a mistranslation. It's not inaccurate. It just misses the flavor, or misses the root. The root, the Greek word behind that is kai diakonai autois. She deaconed them. She served them. Diakonine is the verb to serve. It's the same verb from which we get the office of deacon. It's an important word in the church, more than just waited on. Now, where do we find it in the gospel, in Mark's gospel? The next time it's used is in chapter 10, verse 45. Remember that number. That's an important verse. 10:45, quarter of 11, right? In 10:45, where are we in the gospel at that point? That's the very end of the central section. The whole first eight chapters, right, you've got Jesus preaching, healing, until finally the disciples recognize you are the Messiah. And then you've got this central section that's bookended by two stories about the cure of blind people. We'll see this in more detail when we get there. And then a three-act play with three scenes with the same structure. Scene one, each act, Jesus predicts the passion. There are three predictions of the passion. Scene two, the apostles misunderstand completely. They do something totally inappropriate. Scene three, Jesus does further teaching to explain the matter to them. So by the third scene of the third act, they've been around this three times, and Jesus is getting a little tired of these blockheads. And finally, he says to him, can't you guys understand at all? The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for the many. The Son of Man came to serve. She fever left her, and she served them. It's an arch from here to here. Ties that whole section of the gospel together. Jesus is trying to explain that his ministry is one of service, and his blockheaded disciples don't get it. They want it to be about glory, and of course they want a piece of the glory. But service, even service to the cross, suffering, no, they don't want that. But this old lady gets it. Right at the beginning, instinctively, from her heart, from her gut, she knows what it's about. And she does it. Arch. From 1:30 to 10:45. But notice that 10:45 is a two-part verse. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for the many. Now that's a second arch. You know what Romanesque windows look like? Our windows here, you got the arch at the top, and then you got a second arch inside. The Romanesque thing, instead of the second arch inside, you have a pillar up the center. And then at the head of it, you have a little arch that goes from the center to the left side and the center to the right side, so that you have this and this and then this over top. Well, what we just looked at, 1:30 to 10:45, is that first little arch. And now here's the second that goes from 10:45 to 12:44, quarter of one. Now, where are we there in the gospel? That's the very end of the public ministry. So last verse of chapter 12. Chapter 13 is the sermon about the coming of the kingdom. 14, 15, and 16 are the passion, death, and resurrection narrative. So this is the end of that whole narrative of the public ministry. What does it end with? Another scene that looks like it doesn't have too much importance until you begin to hear its resonances. Jesus is sitting in the temple area teaching near the treasury box. And a bunch of people are coming, and some of them putting in substantial offerings. And then this old widow comes and puts in 2 copper coins worth about a cent. And Jesus points her out and says, that woman gave more than everybody else, because they came from their surplus wealth. She gave her whole life. Now, many translations will soften that and say all that she had to live on. But the actual word in Greek is life. She gave her whole life. Son of Man comes to give his life as a ransom for the many. She gave her whole life. You got that arch. And now you've got the arch over the two that ties the whole gospel together. I mean, who's the character, the principal character in both of these scenes? Peter's mother-in-law and the woman in Jerusalem. They're both women. They're both elderly. They're both widows. They're both anonymous. We do not hear the name of either of them. But they both instinctively get it. Jesus says, the Son of Man has come to serve and to give his life. And this one serves, and this one gives her life. That's the message of Mark. That's what discipleship is about. The disciples don't get it. The 12 of them are still blockheads at the end. It's only after his death and resurrection that they begin to figure it out. But these two elderly women understand up front, understand immediately, and follow immediately in Jesus' pattern. If we want to understand who God is, the God who pours out God's self on us in Christ, then we have to understand who Christ is, the one who comes to serve and to give his life, the one who pours out his life for us on the cross. We have to be like these two old ladies, the one at the beginning of the public ministry and the other at the end, who, not by the process of carefully thinking it all out and agreeing with some abstract conclusion, but by resonance of heart and gut and spirit, knowing that Jesus is right, that this is who God is. And to be like this God, we must learn to serve and to give our lives as a ransom for the many. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.